Today on the Nerd Outcast podcast.
Greetings, Starfighter. You have been recruited by the Star League to defend the frontier against Sewer and the Kodan Armada.
Welcome back. If you couldn't tell from our bombastic opening, we're going to be talking about 1984, The Last Starfighter.
Bombastic, I thought the story sounds
Oh, I didn't. Well, that music is like really epic.
It is.
The music is super epic. So
maybe your alarm clock.
It's like a John Williams, you know, rip. So. we'll talk about
it's like three or four notes off.
We'll talk about it because this whole movie feels like it's. I don't know. We'll discuss. I am your host, Chris Bastian, and as typical for this podcast, I have brought on a group of experts who feel they can speak with some authority about the Last Starfighter. Although, just judging from the room, maybe we're all outcasts now. I don't know. My first expert has been on before, and her name is?
Kitten McCreary.
Welcome back, Kitten.
Hi.
In case someone is listening to you for the first time, what type of nerd are you? Specifically, maybe movies or science fiction?
Wow, I'm a broad spectrum nerd. I was raised by nerds. I went to my very first Star Trek fan event when I was six. Star Trek, Star Wars, lots of old BBC things. Tons of stuff there.
Can you name me some of your favorite sci-fi films?
Ooh, goodness. The original Star Trek movie, Star Trek the Motion Picture, is just absolutely beautiful. Very, very fond childhood memories of the first three Star Wars movies. Not so much the Ewoks, maybe they were annoying, but overall, the movies were fantastic.
You don't want to keep one on your bed, a little teddy bear Ewok?
Maybe. They're vicious teddy bears, though. Bloodthirsty.
What I want protecting my pillows.
Great.
If you take the Ewoks out of Return of the Jedi, how is it for you?
It's good. I still like Empire better.
Of course.
Though, always like rooting for the villains there. And of also like weird things for like my sci-fi throwbacks, Barbarella.
One of my
favorites, you know, and again, I saw that I think for the very first time when I was like 8 or 9.
Is there a bald chick in that?
There is not, but I do have my very, very special love for bald chicks, especially in sci-fi.
All right. Well, you mentioned the motion picture. So.
I did, because Aaliyah is hot.
All right. Well, save it for another bald chick podcast.
Soon to come.
You've seen The Last Starfighter.
Obviously. I have.
And just real quick, you like the film?
I do.
Okay.
I think it's adorable.
All right. Well, hold on to that, because we're going to talk about that.
Good word to use.
Yes.
Let me introduce...
Adorable. Like an Ewok.
My second expert. He has also been on before, and his name is...
Clint Worthington.
Welcome back.
Thank you. Thank you for having me back. I was on the Battlestar Galactica podcast. In terms of nerddom, I know I grew up being a big sci-fi fantasy nerd, but now I think I'm more just a kind of a general film and television nerd. I also have a podcast, Alka Hollywood. It's a weekly film review drinking games podcast where every week my co-host Jared, who has also been on the show, and I will review a new film every week, new or old, good or bad, and talk about it in depth in the context of a drinking game. Jared will usually create a custom cocktail. And Chris, you've been on our Mortal Kombat episode. So there's a bit of bleed over there. In terms of like sci-fi films growing up, I honestly think Last Starfighter was probably among them. Just watching a lot of them. I know one of the very first films I ever saw in the theater was Star Trek IV, The Voyage Home, aka Star Trek IV, the one with the whales. And I wasn't even one. And apparently it was very significant that I didn't make a sound the entire time I watched the film. I was just enraptured, and I'm like, I'm pretty sure I know why I am the way that I am now.
Because of the whales?
Yeah, because of the whales. I'm a huge conservationist.
Can you tell me some of your favorite sci-fi films?
Ooh, yeah, that's a good question. Especially now, stuff like Dark City. Hmm. Dark City's really good. 2001. I just recently rewatched Solaris, which is really the old one, the Andrei Tarkovsky one, which is really, really nice. A lot of really crazy stuff. And I'm also a sucker for action adventure stuff like Serenity. I really like Serenity. Even Edge of Tomorrow was really good. That kind of stuff. I have a general love for that genre to the point where even when they're kind of crappy films, I can still find something to like about them.
So that's why you're here.
Yeah, exactly. So I get to defend any and everything.
You like The Last Starfighter, correct?
I do.
Okay. All right. We'll talk about... Would you say it's adorable?
I would. I think that's the general spectrum, the approach that I'm taking, where it's a fun pulp camp thing.
So cute.
All right. Well, hold on to your thoughts. We'll get back to them, sir. My final expert has been on before, and his name is...
Steven.
What's your last name, sir?
Scalabrino. You gotta really pull for that last part.
You really did. So in case someone's listening to you for the first time, which I would be surprised at this point if they are.
Yeah, probably getting tired of me by now, but all right.
What are some of your favorite sci-fi films?
Well, obviously Star Wars is my big one. Empire, my favorite of the three. The first three I don't really count. You know, it's maybe one altogether it would be. And other movies of note, I would say I love Aliens. The second one is any like military stuff, you know, like Space Marines and aliens and stuff like that. That's always kind of cool for me.
Starship Troopers.
The book, yes.
Very different. Very different.
Yeah, a little bit different. And shows. G.I. Joe is my favorite show growing up. That kind of speaks a lot to
there
me.
There you go.
Say.
Yeah. Surprise question just for you.
What?
Are you excited for episode 7 or are you worried about episode 7?
I am not worried. I'm actually excited.
All right.
I think it's in good hands. Right. So I've seen nothing that's worried me yet.
All right. That's a whole nother discussion.
Exactly.
So, where do you fall on Last Starfighter?
You know, what do we say? It's cute, it's adorable, it's fun. All fun! Right. Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, let me jump over to my outcast. This is the person who has perhaps not seen the film that we're talking about, or dare I say, hate it. He's actually never been on before. He's a newcomer, and his name is...
Brad Rady.
Hi, Brad. Welcome.
Glad to be here.
Did we wake you up, man? I'm sorry.
Yeah,
there's coffee there?
All right. I'm getting there.
All right.
So, Brad, since this is the first time you've been on the show... What type of nerd are you? Are you even a nerd, or what are you?
Yeah, I've got some credentials.
Okay.
I'm a video game, computer, hardware kind of nerd guy. I like getting my hands dirty and playing games.
Okay, what type of games do you play?
Oh, just about all of them. Steam has been one of the greatest inventions.
It's Steam's our engines.
No.
Yes. Great stuff.
Waiting for Half-Life 3, all the action games, from World of Warcraft to your RPGs, Baldur's Gate, like big RPG, big action guy. Good stuff.
Do you play console games?
I did until the 360 came out. I had your regular Nintendo all the way up to Genesis and PlayStation, but as soon as they started getting to be multiple hundreds of dollars and coming out every other year and becoming essentially a PC, I stuck just with playing my PC games.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
Are you often a victim of the Steam summer sale?
Unfortunately, the little mini games that they play, the more you buy, like it's ridiculously addictive, yes. it's very unfortunate.
Yeah.
My wallet, I set aside money when it happens, so it's pretty sad. But you got hundreds of games. It's only like $3, $4, $5.
I know.
Yeah.
Oh, I know.
It's so easy.
You don't have to sell me on Steam.
It's so easy.
Yeah, I do that with GOG, also like with GOG.
Oh,
yeah.
I have Baldur's Gate 1 and 2. Which are epic RPGs, and I don't know what they're going to play.
I literally have a 100-game backlog, and the thing with GOG is that the games are usually will sometimes have trouble playing because they're so old. Like, they'll try to update them, but it won't work. But yeah, so I'm stuck. But I do find myself like attracted to those sales on occasion. I had to say stop at one point. I'm like, no, I will spend the rest of my life playing these games.
Just to bring it back into the realm of cinema, what are some of your favorite movies?
Yeah, I mean, sci-fi. Blade Runner was
great one. Yep. Gotta do that podcast.
Yes. Yeah. Yes.
You just thought that now? Really? And we're doing this movie instead? Oh, Jesus.
You know what?
All things in their time.
Okay.
And not a bald chick, but we can still go there with this movie.
Yeah. All right. True. Yeah.
I mean, you guys hit on most of them. Star Wars, Star Trek.
Okay.
Fifth Element, I thought, was a phenomenal movie. It was a little more contemporary.
Bada big boom.
Now, you have not seen The Last Starfighter.
I have seen the 2.5-minute preview.
Like the trailer from the 80s? Yes. Okay, that probably was the worst thing to watch, because trailers in the 80s were really bad. Okay, how did you... You're a kid of the 80s, right? Like,
yeah.
Okay, so like, did you hit some of those other classics like Tron, Labyrinth, Dark Crystal?
Yeah. Not Dark Crystal. I don't know what that is, but those first.
Batteries not included?
Of course.
Okay, did you miss Last Starfighter?
Just one of those things. Maybe I was watching Dick Tracy too much or something. that's
not a thing. All right. Well, since you are the outcast, you have what we call the conch of outcast. You are allowed to question, comment, challenge anything that we bring up at any time. It is an invisible conch, so that is your power, sir.
I use it for the powers of good.
We're going to attempt to convince Brad that maybe he should give this movie a watch. We'll see. I think we have to convince ourselves that we love it as much as we thought we did. So let's jump into the discussion. Last Starfighter, released in 1984. It's a movie about a boy who feels he's not going anywhere, and then he saves the galaxy.
Yeah, pretty much.
Wow.
It's kind of a lot like Star Wars. Actually, watching the making of this film, they actually reference Star Wars quite a bit, and the director even says, like, George Lucas and Steven Spielberg did this really well, so now we want to set out and do this too, but make it our own. It's got Lance Guest, who I think didn't really have a huge film career after this point.
The only other thing I know him from is Jaws 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
Right. I had a friend who watched this with me, and he said the same thing. He's like, oh, he dies at the beginning of Jaws. I was like, oh.
Spoilers.
No, he lasts.
Does he?
The end of it, yeah.
Oh, I don't know.
He's wrong.
You don't remember him as the lovable Lou Grant from Knott's Landing? I mean, come on.
Yeah, it's all about the Knots.
It's all over my TiVo. Oh, and this is kind of fun fact. He did actually play Johnny Cash on Broadway in Million Dollar Quartet. That was his biggest claim to fame. And now he's doing Comic-Cons. So here we go.
Yep.
Well, other notable people in this movie, definitely Robert Preston, who we'll chat about. And, I can't pronounce his name correctly.
Dan Hurley?
Yeah. Who I've always like, who is that guy? And then I saw him without the makeup and I was like, he's the RoboCop guy. Well, he's done other things. But, yeah.
And he's not RoboCop. That would have been RoboCop I would watch, though.
So, I threw out a series of different questions that we kind of want to talk about. But does anybody have anything they want to bring up off the bat?
And there's nothing. Right. No, I mean, as far as off the bat, like, are you looking for sort of like a general like overview, or if there's something like really specific about the movie that we're like, what about this?
Let's start with an overview, all right? Because upon rewatching it, I was like, oh, this is like a good B+ film. You know, like, it doesn't quite hit A territory, and it came out at a really unfortunate time, because it came out 2 years after Wrath of Khan and 1 year after Return of the Jedi, which are two really huge space operas that you don't want to follow.
And it came out 2 years after Tron. In a lot of ways kind of the same movie-ish.
Yeah. But Tron Star Wars ripoff, basically.
But I mean, it feels, I guess I would pair this with Tron and Cloak and Dagger as being three films that, you know, it was kind of interesting in terms of video game movies, which is something we, Chris had talked about as well when we were in the show, when we did our show last, April, I think? Anyway, Tron, Last Starfighter, and Cloak and Dagger were all films that talked about the experience of playing video games. They weren't adaptations of video game plots, you know?
I have a comment on that. Because yes. I remember when I was a kid and I watched Last Starfighter, I was like, oh, this movie is about this gamer kid who goes in and he becomes like this... Like, the game turns out to be real.
Yeah,
right. And he goes and he gets taken up by this organization to save the universe. But watching it again... They never really define Alex as a gamer. He just happens to play this one arcade game that is at the trailer park.
Yeah,
right. He may not be a gamer actually.
I don't think there's a no true Scotsman kind of situation as well. Like I think it's just it's kind of about how games are framing our sort of perception, like what people use them for. Mm-hmm. And I mean, to a certain extent, in all three films, characters use them as an escape. Tron, it's almost more of a corporate thing too, where Jeff Bridges isn't doing it because he loves video games. He's doing it because he wants to get his money back. Like he wants to get the credit back for these games that he made.
Right.
Kind of stuff. So, I mean, in that respect, I just think it's interesting that before we were adapting video games, we were talking about playing video games. Like, having characters using video games as a tool for storytelling, which I think is interesting.
And isn't that what gaming was in the 80s? Were the arcades? I mean, the consoles weren't really as prevalent.
Yeah.
It was kids
yeah.
going out to arcades.
Yeah, and I don't...
Were the gamers of the day.
I don't remember arcades very well in the early 80s, because I never went to them when I was that little. But the game he's playing in the movie, I feel, is really advanced... For an arcade game, or was that pretty par for the course?
That was pretty par for the course at that time. Because you had, like, you know, your late 70s stuff that was evolving, like, a lot of your, like, sort of, single-line graphics. A lot of your, like, flat
things. Yeah, the wireframe
stuff. Yeah.
There was a Star Wars game that was very similar to
that
thing.
And, but then, like, early 80s, you really started seeing video games expand as far as having games that gave you... depth of field. And so you got to see a lot more of that. So Last Starfighter really was like, it was pretty on par with the technology of the time. But what I found more interesting about the movie and its association with video games was that, like, in the early 80s, like, you know, arcades were where you were social. Like, you didn't sit around at home and play video games. Like, you went out and you went to the arcade and you played video games with your friends. Mm-hmm. But in Last Starfighter, you have this weird thing where there's this weird little sort of isolated trailer park with this one video game, and there's like two teenagers in the entire trailer park, all the rest of it senior citizens.
Yeah.
Yet for some reason they're talking about, oh, you're about to break the record, you're about to break... Who else is playing this game?
I don't know.
Because you have other teenagers here. Like, you have other teenagers in this universe who really, like, they're all assholes.
Yeah. They're drunk rednecks.
It's a little 80s, like, dichotomy of nerd jock kind of thing.
Right.
Yeah. Except with a little bit of country thrown in there.
Come on, scoot down by the beach. Now I'm going to play my games, you guys.
Right, and it was... And so, to me, it was sort of a weird thing to see the whole, like, you know, no, arcades and going out and playing video games and being good at video games in the early 80s were sort of one of those things that, like, made you really cool. Mm. Because, first of all, you had these, like, pockets of holding that were full of quarters. So you could play video games for hours on end. And then you became even cooler if you only had a couple of quarters. But you could still play video games for hours on end because you were that good. Mm-hmm. And the people who weren't that into video games, they just... Yeah. Because, like, while you were playing video games, you could talk to people. You could do stuff. If you were out doing the sports... You weren't.
That's a great phrase.
While we are nerds, doing the sport things, like, winning the points.
Like, it wasn't one of those, like, yeah, you had little conversations in amidst that, but generally you were talking about whatever sport you were doing. You weren't having other conversations about what was going on in your life. And I remember sitting around, like, playing video games with people, and we talked about life. We talked about the things we were interested in. And yeah, I was 10. But still, like, we were social, we were making friends, we were meeting new people in doing this. And it felt weird to have Last Starfighter be like, oh no, this is, like, the one kid who's playing the one video game.
Like, he's bored in this trailer park.
Right, and he's the one who everybody's like,
You want to try to go to college and better your life? Fake!
It is.
Yeah. Well, I think in that respect, to put it simply, Last Starfighter feels like, you know, sort of a homage, I'll put it generously, to Star Wars and E.T. at the same time. Because it has two distinct halves that are really fun, I think. And I actually think work surprisingly well for what they're supposed to be. There's the Star Wars, we have to get in a spaceship and save the galaxy, pew pew laser beam. And there's also the experience of the kid growing up in this isolated environment with maybe not a secure familial situation that feels very like early Spielbergian. And so, in that respect, and the fact that they maintain that later in the film, even after he goes to space, I think is actually kind of cool.
Where is Alex's dad anyway?
Exactly. Well, yeah, it's the typical Spielberg thing.
Right. It's very much one of those, I guess his mom in some way is one of the managers of the trailer park while also working at a diner.
I have a picture she's working at a Denny's in like downtown LA or wherever the city is.
She works at this diner, but it also seems like anytime like when stuff breaks in the trailer park, when stuff's going wrong, it's like automatically it's this like string of old people hollering across their fences of tell so-and-so the antenna's broken again. And you know, and Alex, you know, our hero in this is the one having to go out and fix it. And so I think,
well, and Danny Glover's like younger brother, whoever that guy was.
Briefly. But yeah, well, I felt like he ran that little store. Mm-hmm. That was different. Sure. He wasn't
Starlight,
like,
Starbright.
Yeah. So he was like at the edge. Well, that was the trailer park. It was the Starlight Trailer Park.
It was a very thematically appropriately named trailer park.
Something that you brought up, we kind of talked about it, but it obviously pays a homage to Star Wars. Watching the movie again, I had a real hard time with Alex, because in Star Wars, like the first 45 minutes, Luke is like, oh, my life's not going anywhere, da-da-da-da. Oh, my aunt and uncle get killed. I'm going to go beat the shit out of the Empire. And there's his quest. That's great.
Yeah.
In this movie, Alex's life is going nowhere. He just gets turned down for like a loan for school.
Yeah.
And then this alien comes down and he's like, come save the galaxy. Earth is threatened. Everyone is threatened. You're great at this video game, which means you'll be great as a starfighter pilot. Da, 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 da. And he's like, I don't know. And this persists all the way through to like maybe 10 minutes from the finale when he's already in the ship shooting people and he's still like, no, maybe I should go back to that trailer park and just live out a peaceful life until Earth gets conquered. And I found that kind of like, what is with this kid?
At the same time, that's the central conflict of the film. Like, he is torn between, like, you know, he does want to go out and make something of himself, but he does still have these attachments to, you know, his family and his friends and these people that he's grown up with. I kind of like that. I think it's basically the story of this boy learning to actually leave home.
But he also has found out that his home is threatened, so wouldn't he try and do anything to save that?
I don't think that's necessarily true, because
he also doesn't believe in his capability to save it, also, I think.
Right. Well, that and the fact that, like, he's not a hero. He's not one of these, you know, kids who's like, I'm gonna go out and do the good thing all the time. Like, when he's asked to go fix the old lady's antenna, he's a typical teenager about it. It's like, I wanted to go to the beach with my friends who treat me like crap. I don't want to go fix your antenna.
I was going to go to Tashi Station and pick up some power converters.
Yeah,
you can have sex with your friends when your chores are done.
So he's like whiny through all of that. But then, like, I think what gets me as far as all this, like, so dude pulls up in a DeLorean, which, by the way, is like
it's a freaking DeLorean.
Yes, he pulls up in a DeLorean and is like, hey, kid, here, come get in the car. And he does.
I know, it's Robert Preston wearing a bow tie saying, get in my car.
Hey, kid, hop in.
So he climbs into this car, and all of a sudden it's like all dark, and they're speeding along, and you know, it's just like, oh yeah, I got a surprise for you, we should drive along. And I'm like, I don't remember this movie being this, like, molestery. I guess it is.
I mean, Alex is a kid, but he also, like, the actor is, like, 19 or 20 or something. Yeah. And he's, like, he's gangly, but he's big. Like, I have no doubt, like, he could throw down in a fight if he needed to. but that whole car thing is a little...
I still think it's the fact that, like, he's not adventurous. He's not a hero yet. Like, he wants to, like, not go to just the little community college... up the road from their trailer park or wherever it is, but, you know, there's nothing about him that ever says that he's a kid who's always looking for new and exciting things. He's a kid who hangs out in his trailer park with his kid brother and sits around and whines and plays this one video game because it happens to
it's
be
It's
kind there.
Of the sci-fi version of Dante and Clerks.
Yes.
Like, where he has these ambitions of doing something, but he has he's a real problem with follow-through. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting. And I think the fun thing is that this stupid hobby that, like, that separates him from the rest of his, you know, community, more or less, but is sort of his escape, too, from its kind of banal nature, is the thing that sort of forces him to actually, like, it turns out those things actually have consequences, and you have to be able to follow up and be responsible for them. Like, I love that this sort of unlikely circumstance forces him into this idea of taking responsibility mm-hmm. for himself and others.
He's no Philip J. Fry.
In a lot of ways. Yeah. And there's the fact that, like, for some reason, all of these senior citizens in this trailer park are so excited that he's about to beat the record on this video game.
That's what really got me. It's like there's nothing else happening that everybody has to come out for this.
Right.
He's going to beat the high score.
Well, to be fair, nothing else is going on.
Right.
Yeah. And so then he... Like, you know, when he comes back, you know, at the end, he's, like, in the spaceship, and he's like, I've saved the universe. All these senior citizens are like, cool, all right, and go on about their lives.
No one's afraid when they see the alien or, like, whatever.
Local boy does good.
His friends are real dicks, though, because they're like, oh, you want to go to a city college and learn. Yeah. I have something to say about one of his friends in particular, but I'll save it for the end of the podcast, because I just noticed it, and it was really hilarious.
Sure.
I want to bring up a thought that came to me. Was I like the concept. I think the original concept behind the movie was really great.
Yeah.
Right. You know, it's like, whenever we as kids would play these video games, you'd always kind of seek in the back of my mind and be like, what if this was real? Like, what if I was the starfighter? What if this was an actual thing? And to have it actually be that way for Alex was amazing, you know?
Right.
Yeah.
And to your point is that it was kind of confusing that he was so like, no, I don't want to do this. Like, I would jump on board with that.
I know.
Right?
Me too. Especially,
it took,
like,
way too long for him to be like, okay, I could have given, like, maybe like 10 minutes of, like, you know, the aliens and the ships, and there's this gun, put on this suit, get over here, look in this chair, here's our briefing, we gotta get in a starfighter, let's go. Like, it was just level on top, this, everything just kept piled on top of him, like, really fast, right in the beginning. He's like, okay, I'm kind of getting overwhelmed by all this, and maybe there should have been a point in there when he should have turned and been like, okay, this is what I gotta do now, but instead he was like, no, this is too weird for me, I gotta go home to my trailer park, you know? It didn't make any sense.
Even in being,
he gets,
like,
his shit together by the climax, though, which I think is the important part.
Well, but even in all of it, like, he, you know, when he goes up and there's, like, here's the training station, it's like, he's completely non-phased by all of these different alien species being around. He was just like, what? Huh?
He was stunned.
He wasn't like, I felt that he was very overwhelmed by what was going on.
I don't know. I feel like I'd be freaking out a little bit more.
I mean, but Alex has a very dry sense of humor, so I feel like like, it's not like he's screaming, you know, but it's just I remember, like, just so many, like, weird off, like, sidelong glances at all these different alien heads and stuff, and almost that understated reaction to it is what makes it funnier for me, too. He's like, okay, so this is happening. I'm in this whole room full of people in beige suits with rubber heads, and suddenly this guy with a friar's haircut is yelling about the frontier.
This is like a Men in Black kind of scenario.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah. But even Will Smith jumps on board eventually. Like, it's a good enough time. Like, it feels, I don't know, it feels a little too drawn out.
Yeah, I mean, it takes a really long time of building to get to any sort of action. But once Alex kills somebody,
now he's
like, cool, let's do this.
No, but even after he's killed someone, he's like, they're hiding and he's still like, oh, maybe...
Right.
Like, he's still doubting it. And that's when his co-pilot's like, maybe we should just take you back and you'll live a good long life until the armada comes. It's like, that's just seems a little
pictures
weird.
Of my family.
Brad, we've kind of just, like, jumped ahead. Do you have any questions?
I bet you do, like, Alex right now on the spaceship briefing.
Yeah.
You're acting a lot like Alex.
Yeah.
I think I'm picking it up. Again, the trailer had a lot for it, so.
The trailer actually really does show a lot of the movie.
Yeah.
Let's talk about the supporting cast, or the really amazing actor. Not that that Lancaster's a bad actor.
He has a decent sort of comedic timing.
Yeah, but yeah. I mean, Robert Preston as Centauri and Dan O'Hurley, is that how you say
O'Hurley.
It? O'Hurley. As Grig?
O'Hurley. Think of your favorite Irish pub, and then it's just O'Hurley.
What's the character's name? Grig?
Grig.
Grig?
Grig.
Grig. Centauri and Grig.
Yeah.
They're both great.
Yes.
Yeah, what do we want to say about them?
I think it should be noted that Centauri as a character is an obvious homage to Robert Preston's most famous role, which was Harold Hill in The Music Man.
Yeah.
He's even dressed similarly. They're both con men. Mm-hmm. This is also, I think it's interesting, Robert Preston's last film role. So it was great to see him like end his career riffing on his biggest role.
Mm-hmm. And his whole like introductory speech in the car is like, it's very much that same like Harold Hill patter.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly.
Yeah. Oh, he's great. I saw Music Man after Last Starfighter, but I was like, oh my god, oh, I get it. Now, yeah. I see why you did this. Yeah, he's great. I have nothing bad to say about
him. Yeah, imagine Star Wars if Harold Hill is Obi-Wan, and then you have the Last Starfighter.
I feel that's the role he plays. It's like, we have this movie, and we need to give it some really serious acting chops, so let's get two guys. Let's get Centauri and
Grig.
Can never say his name. Grig.
Grig.
Dan. I'll just call him Dan.
Yeah, Dan. Danny boy.
Steven, anything you want to...
No, I mean, you guys, you're doing it right. I mean, I feel like... you got it. Them be some good actors right there.
And then conveniently, when Centauri dies, spoiler alert, then he's passed off to his co-pilot, Grig.
Yeah.
And that guy's great. He's great, too.
Yeah, I think some of my favorite scenes are just them in the Gunstar, just kind of riffing on each other. Because Grig is this sort of like a warfish kind of... character who's we're just in terms of like he's fanatical, he's dedicated to the Starfighter cause, and so that what better character to introduce Alex to the real dangers and consequences of what's going on and the threat of death than someone who loves the idea of dying in glory. I like to think of them as battling evil in another dimension.
My favorite line of his is they're about to go into battle and I was just like, so how many Starfighters are there? Including you? Yeah, including me. One. It's going to be a massacre. That's the spirit.
That reminds me. That's actually one of my favorite comedic bits, too, because it's when they're about to take off and you hear the engines roaring. And he takes still now to say one. And he says, one! And the helmet flips down. And you hear, as it's taking off, you just see Alex like shouting to the heavens in anger, but silently. And it's great.
That's a great moment.
I mean, and it's also one thing that you have to truly commend O'Hurley on that performance, because the makeup. I mean, it was such a fantastic build of this complete reptilian face. Mm-hmm. But he still, like, there was not a lot of range of motion. Mm-hmm. You know, he had eyes. He had a little bit of motion around the mouth. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you didn't have anything of, like, jawline or, like, forehead or eyebrows or anything like that.
Because even apart from that, he's wearing the helmet most of the time, too.
Yeah. And so it's so nice. And even just having those moments, that laugh that he has. Raspy laugh.
Otherwise, that same
laugh. It's very vaudeville.
Yes.
Kind of, yeah.
I mean, it's beautiful, and I thought it was a very nice way in the film overall to take an alien that in a lot of ways was very humanoid. I mean, it was still like biped, thumbs, like all that kind of thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, he had a lizard face, but other than that, he was human.
Most aliens are humanoid, is what you learn from this movie.
Yeah.
It's not going to be like any weird spider people in like a costume.
Sadly.
Yes.
But it was still this nice thing that like it was such a distinct... and consistent, and they used it enough to have it be like, this is very much like a nice thing for this character to make them a little not human, to sort of give them a little more of that reptilian hiss, but as a laugh.
Yeah. Right.
But they didn't overdo it, so it didn't become wearisome.
Uh-huh. I'm curious to see if that was his choice or was the director's choice. Like,
it'd
be a fun question there.
I think one thing I love about Grieg is they sort of poke fun at the concept too by having the scene where like he shows him the picture of his wife.
It's like
and
a
kids.
Selfie too.
Yeah, it's like a Kodak moment.
Is that just him in a dress? Was it a different actor?
I hope that that was him in a dress. That's going to be my own personal headcanon.
We're only going to put one person in this makeup, so
yes,
let's make it work.
We spent so much money.
Yeah. I'm really glad you brought up the makeup. He does a really phenomenal job of acting past that and through that, and it's great. Yeah, he actually, I remember him more than Centauri. When I remember remembering the film, watching it again, like,
well, because you have more time with him, you basically have Centauri.
Once you get down and dirty to the actual task at hand,
you have Centauri at the top and the bottom,
yeah,
but you don't have him through that development in the center, really.
Yeah,
and he does his Obi-Wan leave like right at the beginning, so
right.
So now we have sort of a Han Solo-ish
character
in terms of like no, not in terms of necessarily attitude, but story purpose.
I want to talk about Zur, who is acting the hell out of the broadest theater stage.
Give me my scepter!
only I will give the order to fire! It's great.
All right, nothing
what
can
do?
Save you.
Fire!
Not even your precious starfighters!
Yes. And
it's weird because obviously nobody else on the ship likes him. They're all like,
I feel like everyone in the cockpit is like upset at his acting. Because like,
he's the Benedict Arnold of this whole story where he's... Well, he gets a lot of clout for, like, you know, being one of the members of, like, the Frontier or whatever who, like, betrays and goes to the Kodian
I feel like we should fill you in on who that character is, because you have the Frontier, like, you have all these, the various people for that, and they all look exactly the same. Like, the men and the women, they all look exactly the same of, like, the bald head and
Rylands, the Rylands.
Rylands.
And... So,
like the planet they go to,
big bulbous forehead,
right?
Yeah,
they're the good guys, and so then you have Zur, who is the betrayer.
Yeah,
he's like the son of their current leader, mm-hmm. and he rose up and tried to overthrow the government, I guess, and they exiled him, and so he goes out past the frontier, and he meets up with the Kodan Armada, and is like, "Hey, I've got access codes. You just need to like drill through the. you just need to drill through the frontier
and fire meteors,
and then we'll go and take over my hometown. That'd be great.
Yeah.
And I don't. The Kodan Armada, I guess, is like rock lizard men too.
Yeah.
They all
standard kind of conquest.
Rock standard conquest. But it's weird because like this is obviously Alex's story, and so seeing all of that makes sense. But then you have this weird subplot of like. Zur and like how much he hates his dad, and he escapes. He doesn't die. He survives the attack, which kind of implies that maybe they wanted to make a sequel and bring him back. But he's just so—he's like the most theatrical.
Oh yeah,
you will ever see on
total
film.
Camp.
He's way up there.
Yeah, he's just shouting and mincing about the place.
Yeah,
it's kind of great. I think the reason I dig that stuff is because, you know, the movie is essentially adapting the very simplistic. Stories we had for video games, like, oh, you are the starfighter, you're going to stop the bad guys. What would those bad guys look like? What would these simplistic bad guys look like? And seeing like this weird, almost like office politics kind of stuff happen on the spaceship is great. And I mean, because not only is Zur fun, he has a weird straight man in like the second in command who has my favorite
he
line.
He has the best
film.
Line as well.
Because like those other moments, you know, everyone else is happening, and then like. You know, Zur bails out, their big ship is going to crash, and everything exploding around them on the bridge, and like his like officer goes, "What do we do?" And the guy looks up, and he has this little like eye patch thing that goes beep, covers his eye. We die. And then they explode.
Boom,
and it's amazing.
It's just like practical.
Yeah.
Just
a total wonderful bit of camp.
That's interesting, though. It's like the other side of... who are the space invaders? Like,
the space invaders?
Yeah. These guys are coming down, they got their internal problems.
How
are
they?
How
are they
know they're going to die.
Yeah.
They're just accepting.
Who orders them in those little blocks?
Who teaches them to go down and left and right?
Is that a formation?
What is that?
But this is where I feel like it takes a hard left away from Star Wars, because Star Wars, like, the villains are... villains.
Yeah, you're supposed to be scared.
Yeah,
by them.
But these guys, it's like, good.
I also think it's because we don't explore the villain's backstory at all.
No.
And I kind of appreciate that because I really appreciated the whole like, they're not necessarily evil. They just, you know, people take stuff. People take space. That's just what they do. I mean,
everything, like, you know, we just gradually expand to take up more and more territory, and that's just what they're doing. It's not malicious, it's just practical.
Yes. So how serious is this film? Is this like,
wall-to-wall silly.
It's just goofy, and okay.
It takes itself seriously enough, like, in the right moments. Takes itself seriously enough to make the camp work. Because whenever you go too far, you need to rein it in and it doesn't work. It doesn't feel like it's taking itself seriously, which is where the best camp comes
from.
Okay.
And I feel like that was sort of one of those things that, like, you see that in several sci-fi films from that year and the surrounding year, because you had Repo Man, you had Buckaroo Banzai, you had Starman.
Like all
that same time, like, you had so much in sci-fi stuff where, like, I appreciated it because it made, like, the darker, grittier things like Blade Runner really stand out and be truly magnificent, but you just had so much, like, bright, bubbler, punchy in the shoulder kind of schlocky sci-fi, and that's very much what Last Starfighter is.
Yeah.
And Wrath of Khan.
Shut up! Wrath of Khan is perfect!
So here's a good question, though. So if it wasn't campy, do you think the concept would have worked?
No.
You know?
I don't think it would.
It'd be too close to
everything else happening at the time.
It would have felt like more of an empty ripoff of the things that had come before it.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess that was my point. It's just like I said before, the concept of a game being real. You know, you can't really take that seriously. It's like,
child's
imagination running wild. Basically, the entire movie, that's what it is. You know? It's like, what if a kid could think of an alien? Well, he looked like this. Oh, weird and kind of wrinkly and big bulbous head and hair over here. It's weird. That's a kid. You know?
Exactly.
That's what they think.
Well, I mean, and the movie itself just embraced so many, like, sort of stereotypes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, you had...
It's very tropey.
You had, like, the drunk jockey, I'm gonna drive around in my pickup truck and make fun of you for wanting to get an education, friends. And you had, like, the not quite trashy but probably still a little sluttier than, you know, 16-year-old big haired girlfriend should have been. And well, I mean, because she was the one who was like, no, let's go out to the beach and, like, just have makeout time and let's
stick my tongue in her ear.
Right, and the simulacrum who comes in to take his place is just like, what are you? Why are you on me? What is up with that? You had the, you know, the 8-year-old little brother who was obsessed with his Playboys. You had the...
That was me, by the way, as a kid. Swimming like a sailor, reading my pornos.
You had the, like, very weary working double shifts at the diner, good nature but just doesn't get it. Maybe you can just go to City College with your friends, mom. And, you know, and then you had, like...
African-American.
Right.
When it comes, Alex, you just gotta hold on to it. You're right back.
I can't not hear those lines in a Morgan Freeman voice.
Right. And you had the old woman who's like, you gotta come get my antenna fixed before my stories come on, because she had to sit around and watch her soap operas. You know, like,
while holding her shotgun, too.
Yes.
So. Like, I mean, so none of these characters had any depth at all. So you just sort of have to accept that the movie is, like, it's about as deep as a puddle, you know. It has,
and then there are shades of interesting things that go on in it, like, especially with the Beta Unit storyline, which
I loved the Beta Unit.
It's actually really funny.
It wasn't going to be as much in the movie, but, like, test screenings wanted more of it, so they filmed more of it. And put more of it.
You're having a very bad dream.
Like, basically, for the sake of the outcast.
Shut up,
whenever,
tell mom about your Playboys.
Whenever they decide to send Alex off to Starfighter College, they decide, well, you know, so that way he just doesn't just disappear, they have this robot duplicate who looks like him take his place. And so while all the space adventures are going on, we also have this fish out of water stuff with the Beta Unit, who's, like, learning how these strange humans behave and is trying to pretend to be Alex, but doesn't really know how it works, and somehow is able to sort of forge a stronger relationship with Alex's girlfriend than he does.
It's a little weird.
It's pretty quickly too.
It's like, get in the car, let's go. We gotta stop this alien. It's a shooting.
But it's also one of those things, like, you never once, and I think that's one of those things that, in a very subtle way, speaks to how isolated Alex was in his community, because. Nobody got it. Like, at one point, his girlfriend, mostly because he wasn't putting out anymore, was, I mean, seriously, the line is like, she's like, oh, what's about my perverted sex stuff? I mean, that, yeah, so that's what clues her in?
Yeah.
That maybe things aren't okay? But nobody else, like, none of the other characters mention or notice that maybe he's not acting right.
But of
maybe
course there's also Lewis, who sees him, like, without his face. Like, where he's, because there's, like, a scene early on where, like, Beta Unit is taking off his face and, like...
Oh, his head. You took his head.
Oh, they're taking the head. Yeah, his head. I couldn't remember what that thing was.
He's fixing his ear. He'd gotten something weird.
Right.
So
yeah.
He takes off his head and sets it on the table and is sitting there, like, tweaking with all the little settings in his head.
He's a robot.
So the, like, robot body is sitting there working on robot head, and the little brother wakes up and he's like, holy crap! And, you know, and the robot's like, go to sleep, you're having a dream. But then, like, as, like, his exasperation, they do this it's painfully silly and stupid, in which the robot, I guess, in that whole idea of, like, if you put your head in your hands and, like, just sort of pinch the bridge of your nose and, like, shake your head. They have the robot body sit there and pinch the nose of the robot head sitting on the table next to him and shake the head.
With the other
hand.
With the other hand.
Yes. But I like that. I think it's fun.
It was awkward.
My outcast, do you have any questions? So
a lot, but you guys are filling in. No. This is, I'm piecing it together.
Any on the characters we're right now? Any on the specific characters?
Basically, Alex gets the high score. Centauri comes along as basically the space con man who has seeded these games. And it's like, whoever gets the high score must be a really good starfighter. We're going to pick him up and send him off. He's basically a recruiter.
Is that just on Earth?
No, all over the galaxy.
Although he's not supposed to be recruiting from Earth, because Earth is not part of the Star League yet.
Right. He's not doing everything above board.
And there's a comment made about, you know, that video game was misdelivered. It was supposed to go to
Las Vegas.
So it must be some sort of, like, fate or portent that it wound up there and that you broke the record and got the high score.
Yeah,
so this is your destiny.
Right.
Typical.
One thing I want to talk about is the special effects. And I'm probably about to catch a lot of flack. Even at the time, I didn't think they were amazing. They were really good for 1984, but as a kid, I remember thinking, just use models. They look so much better. I feel the special effect, like you said, Tron came out before this.
Yes.
I feel Tron works because the special effects in that movie aren't trying to replicate something in the real world. It's all in the computer world. I feel Last Starfighter, since they're trying to use the special effects to create those gun stars and create things that are in the real world that the actors actually, like, coexist with, it just doesn't work as well for me. Unlike Tron,
There was, like, Tron, I felt like, had very good integration of the live action and the animation.
It also helps that they, like, turned everyone black and white and put the color on the suits.
Right.
Yeah.
Whereas with Last Starfighter, it was almost two completely separate processes.
Yeah.
Like, you basically never had any sort of live action going on at a point
with
where you had
CG.
Animation.
True.
You know, it was always like, we're going to show these people sitting in the cockpit. And now we're going to give you a big animation of what it looks like out the window with shooting at the other ships and all the animation. I appreciated the aesthetic in the idea that you see the video game in the beginning and you see the animation from that. And it's very easy to look at it and be like, oh, video game graphics, that's lovely. And then when they show everything, like how stuff looks like out the window of the starfighter as they're actually going through battle, it's the exact same style of animation. And I don't necessarily think that made the animation or the special effects particularly slick, But I liked kind of the idea of like, no, we've made this video game that's just very realistic as far as what our universe dictates space battle looks like.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think it's consistent within the confines of the film.
Right. And I feel like it's one of those things that, like, in sci-fi and horror and so many things, like, you can get away with pretty much anything you want because you're defining the universe as long as you stay true to your definitions. Mm-hmm. And even though the special effects weren't cutting edge or anything like that, they were very much staying true to the way they had defined their universe.
Yeah, I also think that the CGI was just that move to do that completely was very ballsy for the time, and I don't think that we would have advanced as much in CGI as if we had not done that like this early. I feel like in some ways, Last Starfighter pioneered it. I agree that the effects don't hold up as well today, but I think
right.
But I'm able to immerse myself enough in the story that, and I think the shots are very dynamic. I think that's one advantage over the model stuff is there's very limited stuff you can do in camera with that kind of stuff unless you have like Star Wars money. So, sort of what I assume is a mid budget thing. Like,
well, yeah, that's the reason why they did it. Like,
yeah.
some facts on you guys here. There are actually 27 minutes of effects were recorded in the CG. Mm-hmm. It saved them. It only cost them about $14 million to do that, which is half the cost that they had to do it with like models or whatever,
and
half the time too. So it was a lot easier. Yeah. And they're able to gross a lot more at the box office because of that. So it saves them money, saves them time. Plus, it's a pioneering thing as well. So there were a lot of things to consider with that.
Yeah.
So 300 scenes they put together to save themselves some money.
Nice.
That's crazy. I was surprised to learn that I don't have the name of the company. That did the effects.
I do.
Digital Productions.
Digital Productions,
yep,
is that
it? Yep.
That they created a pitch for Star Wars to use computer technology, which I didn't even realize existed in 1977 on that scale. Obviously, Star Wars didn't go with it, which I'm glad about. But that was really interesting to learn that.
But the same guy who worked on Star Wars and Alien and Conan also designed the Starfighters.
The Gunstar looks awesome.
Yeah.
It kind of behaves a way a ship should in space, which I really enjoy.
Yeah.
So.
Good old Ron Cobb.
He's
the man. I also think with... without CGI, we wouldn't have gotten the weird like fluidity of motion. They wouldn't have wanted to do things like the Death Blossom, which is
that was kind of cool.
It's cool and silly in all the best ways. Like, who designs a weapon? This is like their super weapon they're going to use against the bad guys.
But before they go into battle, it's never been tested, and so they're like, it's going to
take a while
to warm up.
We could explode or something.
It's like, it could go horribly wrong. And Alex is like, wait, what?
But here's the strategy, okay? You get your ship to spin around a million miles an hour in every possible direction, shooting your guns and missiles. Like, that's what happens. That's what you do in a Death Blossom.
It's the equilibrium equivalent of...
The gun shot. And it's just as silly.
Yeah.
But just the fact that they were able to do the little spinny ship with CG is hilarious. But, I mean, I want to say, they also do a decent job with the practical effects, too. Like, a lot of that happens in the Beta Alex stuff,
And the car, actually.
Yeah, the car, and the gore, and, like, the optical laser effects, and, like, the assassin who chases them, and whatnot.
Aliens.
By the way, which that was Gul Dukat, who played the guy.
Oh, my gosh, you're right. That is...
The guy who, like, answers the phone booth, and then, like, the lights turn around him, and he turns into, like, a weird... thing with ears on, with eyes on the side of his head on stocks.
Nice.
Aww.
That's
nice.
Mark Alaimo.
The
longest
you.
Neck in Hollywood.
I mean, we should mention the music. The main theme is great. There's not a lot of variety to the themes in the movie. Like, you have that main theme. Like, he's not, I have to say it, he's not John Williams. Like, who is
Craig
it? Craig
Safin.
I don't know if he went on to score other films. The main theme for Last Starfighter is brilliant, but that's kind of it. There's actually like a little bit of like, it sounds almost MIDI quality like music at some points in there where it's like bing 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 bing.
That feels like more of an 80s thing.
Yeah,
but that's something I appreciated because I felt like that was sort of one of your direct connections. To video gaming.
Yeah.
Mm.
Like, you know, our video game music, I don't think had progressed that far. Yes. Like, you had a couple of games in the arcade that had, like, a great, like, opening, you know, just like last Starfighter video game had. But then other than that, like, your sounds that happened in-game were generally, like, very, you know, your very beepy, very MIDI thing. So I sort of appreciated that for the movie, because I feel like if you're going to have me watching something that has that animated blocky look of video games, I appreciate the additional sensory input of something that sounds like blocky video games.
Like, especially when he's doing the test thing with the drones, and it's like the little MIDI, little trills.
Yeah.
Which is fun. But yeah.
Brett, go ahead.
No, sorry. I will say that to the sort of derivative nature of the score, I mean, it's great. I still love listening to it. But anytime I task myself with remembering the last Starfighter theme, half the time it ends up being Superman.
John Williams. Brad, do you have any questions so far?
Well, on the sound effects, in the preview, the trailer, there was the scene where they're in the some sort of command center, and then there's the rubbery alien.
Yeah,
and the consoles of just a bunch of lights and the noise that I'm not even gonna attempt to recreate it, but it seemed like the Wilhelm scream of like computer sound effects for the 80s. It was just like a it's like a buzz and a beeping kind of thing, they must have just used that in so many movies, and it was like, oh, well, that's
cute.
Tie it all together.
Right.
Well, I think in general, Star Wars established that idea that it's space, it's large, it's vast, it's got to be epic. You got to have epic music, epic sound. It's got to sound like the expanse that we're going into.
Yeah,
you know. Whereas Tron is more like, oh, we're inside a computer, so it's technically 8-bit.
Very minimalist kind of thing.
Yeah, very minimalist, very, you know, robot-y sounding music.
Mm-hmm.
So I think they're just kind of establishing that same trend, or continuing that same trend that Star Wars movies previous had done.
Yeah, I mean, like, and John Williams established what kind of film music language was, especially for these kinds of big genre picks. They had to be bombastic, you had to have that. So I feel like I couldn't really think of a way they should do it differently, I think.
Yeah.
Maybe have a bit more complexity in the themes. But I mean, I think it was good that they picked one or two motifs and just did variations on those themes. Like, you know, the main Starfighter theme, you'll have that, you know, have the woodwinds come in whenever Alex is, like, looking up at the sky and wondering what might be.
Seeing the two suns. I mean,
Wrong movie.
And keeping that simplicity, like, keeping that focus on things, also probably really helped them when the Starfighter video game was released.
Yeah.
And you had all of those, like, it was the exact same.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They didn't.
It was an exact port.
They didn't have to, like, re-engineer things to make it work within a video game, because it was already right there.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Merchandising.
Yeah. Oh, yay! You know?
Last Starfighter the video game.
We might not be able to make a sequel, but we can make a game.
Right. Actually, was there an arcade version of this game?
There was.
I played the Atari version, which was nothing like the game in the film.
There was an arcade version, and it was pretty good. I remember playing it.
Is it like the game in the movie? Like, is it?
It's very similar. It's not quite the same, but it did still have those same basic, like, depth of field graphics of, like, spinning
like
to shoot
thing.
Things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah.
We're nearing the hour mark, and I've got a couple of questions, final questions I want to throw out to my experts. But Brad, do you have any other questions or something that we've talked about that you want to kind of touch on? We've got some time. So
you know, well, you guys did a good job of kind of running through the gambit. Let me ask, you kind of talking about between sound and the lackluster epicness of it, what would you say... Where would Last Starfighter land on, say, a scale of 1 to Dune?
Dune.
In terms of the sound?
The epicness of the movie. Mm, and maybe the potential.
Well, it doesn't have as many songs by Toto. So I'll say that.
Doesn't have Sting.
Doesn't have Sting.
Doesn't have Sting.
Metal Bikini,
right.
Yeah. If only Sting had sung.
It would have saved the movie, I think. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, man, that metal bikini, though, was stupid. Yeah. You almost see his fields of barley.
Great. Oh. Yeah, I don't know, on a scale from one
Sting
to...
jokes.
On a scale from one to Dune, yeah, I mean, I have to agree with Steven. It's like, it's maybe a 4.
Yeah.
It's,
yeah.
You know, it's not sweeping or really, you know, epic.
It's like
but,
it works.
It's like an Ewok
it's
adventure.
It's memorable.
You know, it's to Star Wars kind of thing. Think of it that way. You know?
Yeah, but it's
a
just,
little fast Ewok running around somewhere. Yeah, you got that in there somewhere.
It's nice and chipper.
Yeah.
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 Right.
We'll have our Jedi. We'll have the Jedi podcast. And we'll talk about the Ewok.
It'll just be 2 hours of Ewok chat.
Yeah.
No, I can get in a good half hour of hating on Leia during that, too.
Oh. All right.
Save it for
Stand
that.
Her.
Save it for that.
Wow. All right. Save it.
Save it.
Pause.
Your question actually is kind of similar to what I was going to ask. So my two questions that I want to throw out to everybody, we'll do the easy one first. Does this film hold up? Does it hold up?
Mm-hmm.
Kitten, does it hold up?
I think it would be a wonderful installment for our drinking podcast.
Yes,
that's right. I wouldn't mind getting a little piece of that action.
You definitely drink every time Centauri says my boy.
Yes. Yes.
When he laughs too.
Yes.
It was pretty easily.
Every time Lewis makes a comment about his porn.
Yes.
Or swears.
Anyway. Sadly, no. I don't think it holds up. I think it's a very sweet movie, but I don't think it was even on par for the technology of the time. And I think there were a lot of very similar movies telling similar stories in better ways.
Clint?
I'll probably have to go in a similar direction. I mean, it certainly couldn't be made today. You definitely, whenever you're watching it, you definitely do have to keep in mind the context in which it was made.
Right.
But I mean, I think to an extent that's true of every film. Yeah, and in terms of it, it's just sort of a bit of campy, fluffy fun that doesn't really... It's tough to kind of recommend it to someone who isn't already familiar with those sort of tropes in that genre. I wouldn't say it objectively holds up, but to someone who's familiar with that sort of basic language, you could definitely enjoy it.
Steven?
Yeah, I kind of agree. You know, it's not like one that I go to like, man, I really want to watch Last Starfighter tonight, you know? But I did see it as a kid, so I wasn't, you know, indoctrinated into it then.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, you know, I still have a little bit of that childish joy when I see the movie now. And I go back to when I see it. And that's cool for me, but it's not cool for someone new, who's our age maybe, who hasn't seen it for the first time. They're not going to get that same reaction.
Yeah.
You know, who understands, like, maybe the special effects aren't the greatest, you know, but they were going for something, and it works for what it is, you know.
I think it could be a really nice thing if somebody is, like, familiar with a lot of, like, the sci-fi movies of the late 70s and early 80s. If it's like, hey, it's a Sunday afternoon, and I'm just, like, doing laundry and chilling.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's a really good, like, I'll just have this kind of on and going and pick up a couple of nice little nuggets of stuff here and there.
Sure, I'll check my Clash of Clans while I'm watching a movie.
Yeah,
you know?
Exactly. There you go.
All right.
That's one flighty little adventure pick.
Yeah.
I think I know what you're all going to say, but judge based on those answers.
Yeah.
If you had to go to somebody and say, you need to watch these three, or let's say these five science fiction films from the 1980s, would Last Starfighter even be in that top five? And take out, obviously, Star Wars and Return of the Star Wars and Star Trek. Take those two franchises off the table.
No.
Wah,
no.
Wah.
There's just too many other really good things that came out in the 80s that...
You care to list any of them?
Oh, I think I would. Of course, Blade Runner.
Of course.
It was...
Yeah.
Gorgeous. It's such wonderful eye candy.
Amazing.
Repo Man.
Yeah.
It's cheesy and
love
it.
Repo Man's great.
I love it. And 2010.
Oh, yeah.
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 You know, that's also from 1984. And so that's...
Solid.
I see you have a huge list.
I have a list.
You only
was,
get to say
three. Yeah, because it was more of the idea of like, well, what was Last Starfighter competing with? and you know what is what are its peers and
Clint, same question to you.
Sure. I would not include this if only just because there are so many other great options. The 80s were a great year for films in general, not just sci-fi but particularly sci-fi. And I guess if I had to pick, I picked five. Two of them I share with Kitten, Repo Man and Blade Runner. But I would also throw in Aliens. Solid.
True. Mm-hmm.
Yep. And Back to the Future.
Back
to the Future.
Yeah, counts.
But Starfighter used the DeLorean first.
Yes, and I was torn between the two, between two John Carpenter films, but I think I may have to go with They Live.
They Live
is
awesome.
Yes.
Yeah. It's time to kick ass chew bubblegum.
All great 80s sci-fi movies.
I have
a
quote to that on my website.
A friend
of mine when I went in to fix a film he was working on.
Uh-huh.
It's great.
For my stage combat certification, I did a scene from They Live.
Put
on the glasses. Put on the glasses. We started each other up.
Yes.
It was great.
Steven, same question to you. Is it in your top five?
No. For sure. For sure. I'll watch it maybe like 15. It's down there somewhere below. Most of them already said that are in my top five. Just to name off a couple of more. And I'm trying to think of the name of it. I can't even find it. There was one movie where it was like a starfighter, a pilot, like humanoid pilot.
Oh, Enemy Mine.
That one is amazing.
Again, also on my list. Because, and I looked at that because I was looking at that. Because the makeup they used for that, very, very similar to Grape.
Right.
I keep
but
getting those
was,
confused because
but it was
of it.
3 years later. It was from 85.
Okay.
So 1 year later.
Yeah.
But
that one's amazing just because of like the characters that happen if you need to. Oh, amazing film. Go see it if you haven't seen it. Some other ones that I liked, Mad Max.
Masking
on the 80s, fantastic.
Yeah, that's right.
The Abyss.
The Abyss is solid.
Yeah, it was late 80s, you know.
That
80,
counts.
It counts.
The Abyss gets a bad rap. It gets unfavorably compared to other James Cameron movies that were better, but still really good.
And because I like my shoot 'em up kind of things, RoboCop, the original RoboCop, of course.
Yeah.
And Terminator.
Yeah.
And again, something else.
I want your shoes.
All right.
Because I have to say, like, you know, even from the 80s, like even keeping that like 1980s cheesy The Adventures of Buckaroo Banzai.
Yeah, I forgot about that one.
That's
soundtrack is amazing.
Yes.
Today.
It's also
so
the
good.
Closest Americans will get to doing an American Doctor Who, I think.
Oh, yeah. Very true.
Yeah.
You have all gotten so excited.
I feel
so
break up. I wanted to go home. Home is where you're hot.
You've gotten so excited for films that we're not talking about today. Makes me feel glad I chose this topic. Brad, did we do it? Are you going to watch Last Starfighter?
No.
Okay. That's
a shame.
What if we turn it into a drinking game?
Or
maybe.
An off-Broadway musical, because there definitely was a Last Starfighter off-Broadway musical that happened in
2004. That's it?
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Wow.
Right?
All right. Well,
some songs are on YouTube, I think.
Yeah.
Terrible.
Last Starfighter, we salute you. You did some interesting things.
I'll throw some fun tidbits about the movie that
Please
you may not know. The director, actually,
Nick Castle.
Yes, Nick Castle was the original body in Halloween of Mike Myers.
Yeah.
Yeah, good friends of John Carpenter, actually. And he also co-wrote the screenplay for Escape from New York. And went on to do a lot of other screenplays and won like a ton of awards for some other films. So check him out. He's kind of a
he did
guy.
Some work on
He's
Hook.
A renaissance man.
Also,
yeah.
I don't know what he did though.
What?
He did work on Hook.
He did. He co-wrote Hook.
He co-wrote
Hook.
So he's had a good, decent
career.
Good for him.
Yeah, so, doing well. So
right.
I have fun facts.
Well, at this time, you guys are welcome to plug anything else that you're working on, shows, podcasts, whatever you wish. We'll just go around the room.
All right. There will be a show coming out here in Chicago, being in the Chicagoland area. It's called Musical of the Living Dead. That's exactly what it sounds like. It's a musical about zombies. It's every zombie stereotype rolled into one musical. It's an original adaptation. It's the 6-year running. It's been given by the Chicago Reader Best Musical 5 years in a row. And this will be our last year for it. So if you haven't seen it yet, come out to Stage 773 on Belmont and check it out this October.
Over at the Public House Theater, we've got Game of Mobile Homes coming up, which sounds just as fun.
Humphrey's similar to Snapfire a little bit.
And another show for fall lineup, Nightmare on Backstreet, a musical about the Backstreet Boys, with homage to the old slasher horror movies.
Nice.
Like I said before, I have my own podcast, alcohollywood.com, A-L-C-O, Hollywood. We do new releases basically every Thursday or Friday. Next week, we're going to actually have Nathan Rabin on to talk UHF, because he literally wrote the book on it. So that'll be great. Otherwise, I just joined the cast of the radio drama Our Fair City. We're going to start recording for season 6 soon. And right now, it'll probably be done by the time this podcast airs, but this is the last weekend for Our Fair City's run at Chicago Fringe Festival, so that's pretty great. I'm not involved in that, but the thing I'm affiliated with is. So, yeah, if you want to check out an awesome radio drama that you may hear my voice in soon, OurFairCity.com.
For me, I've had most of my work lately has been like short films and things like that, so when they're done... Hooray! Nobody knows when that'll be. I spent some time in Michigan working on a short film with Synthetic Love Productions that will be called Stone Road. I get to play a nice demon thing. Pretty soon I'm going to be shooting with director John Borowski, who has a nice thing on Netflix right now about H.H. Holmes, for a short piece called Canine Clone. And I also got to spend a couple of days on set with the fantastic people with Tello Films working on a web series called Hashtag. And they have a lot of fantastic series, and you do have to pay for them, but they're well worth it. So you should check that out at tellofilms.com.
Cool.
Nice.
If this podcast goes up in September of 2014, then go to Stage 773 and see This Side of Witty. If it goes up after that, then my show is already closed, but hopefully you saw it and you really enjoyed it. We'll be producing other content, so look for This Side of Witty, easily Googleable and whatnot. You can also find me around Public House Theater, doing shows and videos and whatnot. I've also guested on Alcohollywood and Blastro Podcast, so please check out both of those podcasts. If you have any questions, comments, concerns, or topic suggestions, please email them to nerdoutcastpodcast@gmail.com. Well, everybody, thank you for coming out and giving a little love. Just a little, but we gave it some love.
A bit, yeah.
And hold on, my inner child to this one.
As much love as my, 10-year-old 80s child could give.
Right.
Yeah. And thank you to Brad, our outcast, for coming and listening to us kind of go back and forth about whether how much we like this movie. I have been your host, Chris Fashion, and joining me today to talk about The Last Starfighter have been...
Kitten McCreary.
Clint Worthington.
Brad Rady.
Steven Scalabrino.
Thank you for listening.